Good evening and welcome to Radio Edutalk at the third time of asking. We are now live and this is David Noble and Dalgetty Bay as ever. Delighted to welcome to the show second English teacher Hugh O'Donnell, and we're going to be talking around digital for excellence, a bit of a play on words there. And so Hugh, could you start off by telling us a bit about yourself?
Okay, my name is Hugh O'Donnell, as David said, third time lucky. I have the privilege of using my son's Xbox headset tonight. I think you took pity on me when you saw my Blue Ant little wireless earpiece. So this is a first for being on Edutalk and using an Xbox controller. I'm not a big gamer. I went through the 80s with enjoying the ZX Spectrum and spending more time in that in school. And to be perfectly honest, I didn't excel at school. I wasn't really that interested at school. And didn't have a particularly good experience at school. And I think that's one of the things that drives me every morning when I get up, is to try and make that experience for the pupils, and especially boys, engaging and somewhere that they want to be. After leaving school, various jobs, found my way back into higher education. I had to work hard to get back. I didn't achieve as well as I could have in secondary, and I found myself eventually on the University of Paisley's software engineering course. Did a placement in Aberdeen, and for 12 years I was a programmer, working between places like Caverna, Franti Subsea, working in digital communications, where it's the oil rig, topsides, control these wonderful multi-billion pound projects on the seabed, all very technical, all very interesting. Met some chaps who'd worked for NASA during the late 60s when they were at TRW. And came home and worked for Scottish Power in the late 90s, early 2000. Made redundant, and there's an eye-opener. Told that you're surplus to requirements, and so five engineers, including myself, we set up a little company called Blue Tanzo, Blue Carbon, and for a couple of years, five engineers, you can imagine what that's like, various high hopes and various contracts, worked as a little software development company in Greenock, and eventually we sort of, made our own way and decided to go in and do other things. I did a bit of the Big Plus, did a bit of volunteering for the Big Plus, and at that time I was a programmer. I was also doing an OU degree. I had this absolute desire not to get it wrong again after my experience at school. And since leaving school, I've undertaken various postgrads, and I found myself, a subject that I really love was English. I found myself back doing English at night, and midway, three quarters way through, doing OU English Lit degree, I thought I'm really enjoying seeing such a turnaround in adult learners with Inverclyde voluntary scheme. I thought this is for me. I really enjoyed it. I might have not had a good experience at school, but I saw for people who had dyslexia and other more pressing needs, I saw how that had actually affected their day-to-day life, you know, the social skills, the social literacies that were sort of weren't there for them. So I thought, I'm going to go back, and I'm going to go back and teach English. So I was very lucky enough to have John Lawson, Raymond Saltsiak at Jordan Hill. I found myself in a wonderful placement at Dunoon Grammar School, where I am still today. They haven't found me out yet. And between 2005, 2007, what was happening was I was getting the more difficult classes, and I was finding myself really needing to use my IT skills to try and enhance the learning. And around about 2007, 2011, I found myself embarking on the MSc at e-learning through Edinburgh University and the Chartered Teaching Scheme, which David was on. So I found myself doing two postgraduates nearly simultaneously, to my wife's chagrin. And at that point, I was looking at what games, what computer games could bring to the classroom. And I actually started in 2011, 2012, a little game called Silent Hunter 3. I don't know if you're aware of that game, David.
I think I've read maybe yourself blogging about it in the past, but yeah.
it's not a multiplayer, it's a single user, so I every day the wife would say, oh, here's another package from eBay. And I was picking these licenses up for maybe £2, installing on the laptops. And what they effectively do, they allow the pupils to engage in missions, World War II missions, as a submariner, but as part of the Kriegsmarine. And I found that they really enjoyed the atmosphere, they enjoyed the sense of control, the four dimensions, the fact that they were immersed, pun intended, in this World War II world, where they were able to use map reading skills, also talking to each other, helping each other out, reading the you know, coordinates, listening to various signatures of warships, you know, from the, you know, in the depths of the Atlantic. They were really, really, really engaged by this. So what I did is I actually wrote a little unit around it whereby they embarked, they joined up on the Kriegsmarine, knowing and you know, beforehand that 80% of submariners and German submariners did not return. There was a high death rate, and it also let them see the other side of it, you know, because I'm sure they're aware of the sort of, it's almost like a sort of black and white view when we look at history, but they were on the other side and they were seeing that these submariners were human beings too. They missed home, and they really enjoyed it, and they journaled as someone going through the ranks. So I was cutting out little badges which we'd found, and they were going up and they were gaining these little badges. And when they actually went out, or using this game, simple, so it's a 2005 Ubisoft game. When they actually went out, what the software allowed you to do was recreate missions. And we found that the U-Boat 96, which features in Das Boot, which I also used as a narrative backdrop, which is important, and I'll come to that later. We actually found that, I think it was 1941, we found, of the 11 patrols, we found Patrol 4 and Patrol 7, and the system allowed us to, using data from Google Maps, allowed us to actually recreate the missions. And we put the ships, the three ships for the 28th of April, 1941, Patrol 4, actually in the locations where they were sunk. And the pupils were then embarked on trying to find those ships and destroy them and come home. Sometimes they didn't find those ships. I don't know if it was a bug in the system or whatever. The way the gameplay would, you know, the way the gameplay was created, they would then head back to Saint-Nazaire, and by that time they'd realise that France had fallen. So that was very interesting. And again, we're very limited with what we can actually do with regards to timetabling. We did have some input from the history teacher, but at that point, when I saw three girls, pigtails, makeup, actually having to keep them back and making sure that they fall back in, because they'd fallen out with each other because they didn't know where to turn. This destroyer was coming at them, and they were issuing instructions. And I thought to myself, these are probably the most unlikeliest gamers, and even they are really engaged in this. And at that point I thought, well, we've got something here. So at that point, 2013, I came across a piece of software called Mars Colony Challenger, developed by Howard Dodge, who is a programmer. And he was a programmer for EverQuest, one of the large multiplayer MMORs. Again, I am not a gamer, and I think that's the benefit when I'm out talking about games-based learning. It shows you that sort of anyone can do it. One of these multiplayer online games, and he developed a system which was scientifically accurate, and it involves players embarking in real time on a manned mission to Mars, which was scientifically recreated within the software. It had a recreated atmosphere and a recreated science behind the seven phases that exist in the game that will allow humans to go and make a successful colonization. At that time, I had finished the postgrad. The chartered teacher scheme had been scrapped. And I had a choice at that point whether to finish the master's, the dissertation with UWS, or with my fantastic tutor, Hamish MacLeod to finish at Edinburgh, and I chose to finish the dissertation with Edinburgh just because of my the bias with what I was doing lent itself towards the games based in the digital area that I was exploring. So I embarked on an interdisciplinary task involving Mars Colony Challenger 2013 and 2014. And between June and December, and you know yourself, David, the upfront planning that goes in a master's dissertation is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And it's huge. So that's where we got to. Someone who wasn't really a gamer, but who'd worked in programming to use his ICT skills to enhance learning, becoming a bit more refined using Silent Hunter 3, building applying real instructional design behind the Silent Hunter 3 project, and then finding the Mars Colony Challenger. There are a few people who thought, no, it's not a game, it doesn't work, it won't motivate them, it's not all singing, all dancing. And I'm glad I stuck to my guns, because that's the piece of software that I chose for the focus of the master's dissertation. And the master's dissertation, the project, the sort of data collection stage, was between January and March 2014. And it was looking at game-based learning with a bunch of S2s, of mixed ability S2s, pretty evenly split. There were 13 in the class, and what we wanted to do was look at what we could do. How would this tool, this MCC for shorthand, how would this tool act and function and become part of the learning process? So we installed it on 20 computers in our computer suite, and there were 6 laptops installed with the software, and I took between 28 and 30, you have to account for absences, etc. We basically had 7 groups of 4. And those 4 pupils in each group, all the pupils, first of all, from the readings, games-based learning is fine, but you don't just put a game in front of them and say, get on with it. I think the readings are Royal, and the lady's name, I'll just double check this. I've probably not got it written down. She's at the university, I think it's Nicosia. She'd been talking about how narrative is very important to support a game. So what I did is I'd been using the BBC Space Odyssey 2004 series to give the pupils a sort of launch pad, again, pun intended, whereby it allowed them to look at what an imagined tour of the solar system would be with regards to preparation and leaving Earth. So the pupils looked at this sort of context with regards to leaving home and heading to Mars in that 9 months. What would that be like psychologically? So we watched the first phase of the DVD, the mission, and there's a book that accompanies an excellent book that accompanies the series, which is full of fantastic imagery, non-fictional pieces and fictional narratives from the 5 scientists who go to explore Mars. So it allowed them to try and to sort of get into the heads of these scientists, because it's not just about going and playing the game and dumping doubt, ticking some boxes. I wanted these pupils to be scientists and human beings. So with this context, we had some journal writing about what it was like to leave home, leave their horses. One of them said it was amazing how hot a horse, Juniper, horses still smell the same in space. Fantastic. That's a human being. That's a scientist who's able to reflect on missing home, as well as when they go into the game, looking at the butterscotch sky, and then start to talk about the wellheads. So that was the initial upfront thing. We had to give them a narrative backdrop, something upon which to hook their character. When they log into the game, the premise was, right, okay, we've landed, NASA have given you a day. And that was just to allow, to work out some problems with the game. Because they're teams of 4, and the little avatars appear in real time, so they're all in the same sort of virtual space. And they've arrived outside the habitation unit. It's already been assembled. And next to that is a garage with a Mars rover and certain elements of equipment that have to be installed. Now, Howard has employed, he has deployed these elements, and they have to be, they can be installed out of sequence. But effectively, what the pupils do is, and there was some science input at lunchtimes. Again, it's a small area of research. We've got loads of data. The strictures of the timetabling disallowed for us to sort of have any synchronisation with science, which was already, you know, with regards to Manning and their own timetable. Yeah. So one of the colleagues, Gavin Crawford, he offered some science lunchtime background teaching. Very, very thankful to him. And six or seven of the girls involved went along to that. And we're interested to see how much of that then was sort of seeded in the environment. So they've landed. In this Mars Colony Challenger, the first phase incorporates SCN 05 and 15, two learning experiences and outcomes from the science curriculum for excellence that we have in Scotland. And we're interested in the three states of matter, okay? So the first thing that the pupils have to do is they have a finite amount of air on their backpacks. So in order to survive, they have to get that hab up and running. So they have to install two water pumps, and they know that with the background information that where they've landed on the poles, one of Mars's poles, which is ice. There's substrata ice, so there's been wellheads that have already been driven into the ground. The pupils then install the water pumps. They know that the heat will travel downwards, and they'll start that process whereby they're starting to generate water, which will obviously is necessary to life, but is the first stage in the generation of oxygen. So the water pumps are installed, and the pupils collaborated. As they were doing that in-game activity, they were then asked to journal. They were working on questionnaires. We did group discussion interviews. I had a variety of audio recordings, little science clips placed around the classroom, flip cameras to capture their game progress, their interactions, non-verbal and verbal interactions, a vast amount of data. It's very new to me. It's the first time, so I was covering all the bases. So the first phase was to get the water pumps installed and a water flow going. The next phase would be, okay, and we'd touch base, we would sit down, we'd say, right, okay, we've got the water, and we'd draw diagrams on the board, and I would allow the pupils that sort of autonomy to then go and look at the, you know, go and find out how can you get water, you know, pose them questions, what if, what can you do with the water? And gradually we would get from those pupils who had been seeded, and also bringing in the previous knowledge. Water's H2O. Well, okay, so let's look at the constituents, and we get the hydrogen, what's hydrogen good for? So we'd find that they were sort of unpicking why they were doing these certain things, using the scientific knowledge. So once they had water on the Mars Colony Challenger, we would take the hydrogen and we'd pump that out for later use for the rover, which is used for other phases of the mission, phases in the colonisation programme. They would take the oxygen and then that would be fed into a third phase. The oxygen would be collected, and Mars, I didn't know this, has a very, very low pressurised atmosphere. And what it would do is the oxygen would be collected and mixed, part of the scrubbing process would be mixed with nitrogen, carbon dioxide, and then after a while, the hab unit would the equipment that the pupils had would tell them that the hab unit had reached a 14 psi pressure, and it was safe to take their hats off or to take their helmets off. There was one area where they could go to use the facilities, so to speak, which they all found, and it allowed them, it was a sort of small safe area where they could remove their helmets and visit the bathroom. But as I said, other than that, they were under the pressures, and the rules of the game were, well, if you don't enable this process, you will die, and it won't then lead on and allow you to do the subsequent phases in the game, which were far out. They were totally out with the scope of this project. The project was three states of matter. What can the pupils do? What pieces of writing can they do? What evidence do we have that they are interacting? How much science is filtering through? And look at look at the collaboration, look at the quantitative and look at the qualitative aspects from the project. And we gathered all that up, and they had a final personal managerial writing project, which was then assessed. And it was assessed on its literacy content, its English content, because I was interested in taking the literacy and the English, taking the orthographic and the English, separating those, because it's interesting for the scientists. They're interested in the science, but they're also interested in vehicles. Yeah, they're also interested in their vehicles for embedding literacy. And what's happening just now is, subsequent to the publication, myself and the PT and another science colleague, we've now sat down and we're looking to try and formally timetable a week in 2017 of a formal deployment of this, and looking at how to achieve those SEN, those science outcomes, and something absolutely tangible, either as a separate piece of, either as a document, a multi-genre document which has charts and tables, and or if it's just a piece of narrative that just explicitly tells the reader that this pupil knows, and without any duplication across the disciplines, this pupil knows and understands the three states of matter because they have been involved in that.
Would you use Mars Colony Challenger again, or is there other games or software out there that's maybe more suitable to you 2 years down the line?
Well, again, English teacher, workload, two higher classes, David. I've only recently been informed that there is a new version of the game. But going back to the Mars Colony Challenger, once you've got that established, then you have to feed yourself. So there's mushrooms, there are tomatoes, there are fish eggs that have to be hatched. So you've got all that, there's all that further science, there's geological processes that the pupils can then go and do. So there you're looking at bringing geography in, as well as looking at the, not just the sort of general sciences, then more the specifics. You've got biologists that's interested in, the fish eggs and that sort of reproductive cycle, the nitrogen cycle. There's a whole lot to the game that's sort of been untapped, David. So I don't think I've finished with Mars Colony Challenger just now.
Yeah.
And again, with the authority just now, we had a look at this, and we're looking at one of the we're looking at perhaps putting together an attainment challenge bid, and perhaps this is something that if you work in partnership with the author of Mars Colony Challenger, it's interesting to him if he knows that he has this piece of software that as it stands just now it's good, but if we work in partnership with him and perhaps tailor it towards curriculum for excellence and develop this package of resources that fulfills CFE, then there's a great synergy there, that's untapped for taking science forward. As I said, some of the writing was absolutely amazing. Some of the things that the pupils did, it was a safe place to fail. One of the chaps took his helmet off and he died. It was a sort of canary in the coma, but he didn't write about that. that didn't appear in the writing. The diegesis, the diegesis was never sort of, I think it was only one pupil, she had severe problems connecting. All the pupils stayed in character, some amazing and quirky, and the game lent itself to, actually there were parts missing, okay, and I wasn't on board to say, well, it's over there. That sort of destroys, now as long as you don't sort of invalidate the science learning, it opens up, it's quite the way the game's constructed, the narratives are not, they are so varied. We had We had one team going home after sending a rather irate email back to NASA using capital, all caps, you know, because they could not, they couldn't find some waste bin. And again, it shows the importance of every little sort of, you know, that every nut and bolt on one of these projects is critical, that they had gone so far and they couldn't find a waste bin to complete the scrubber installation process, and they were on their way home. So it injects a whole sort of reality to learning science. And that one of my English colleagues was just shaking his head saying, but they weren't there. How can this be personal? But they were. What do you mean that? They were dragging the heavy wellhead. How can it be heavy? You know, so a lot of interesting elements to the writing. What's really come from it is once I was up and attended Edinburgh and got the Masters, Stephen Bezina, somebody had mentioned that he was involved in the Press Start Journal, and you had Matthew Barr on last week.
Of course, yeah.
I then submitted the Masters, and that's one thing, if you want me quickly to speak about that. I spent 10 months, I'm looking at the sofa I lay on when the baby was up. Just honestly, David, one of the key things from this was the absolute torture of working with reviewers across the world, and to, you know, it's fantastic, the colloquium, the editorial team that's on board for Press Start. I'd never been involved in anything like this, and suddenly I found myself being absolutely humbled, having to take this. I think it was 50,000 words at one point, and then down to 20, then down to 15 for the mass, having to really scale it down. And being told that, and I shared this with the pupils, Mr. O'Donnell has got, I said to them, you know how Mr. O'Donnell gives you 2 stars and a wish? I said, yes, sir, yep. Mr. O'Donnell just received a document with 38 wishes and no stars.
Yeah.
And they were involved in that process of getting that Masters, removing the descriptive statistics. I had no idea about some of the quantitative research methods that were then had to be used to just focus on purely those 28 pupils. How did they perform against the other S2s when we looked at the writing, and using a Mann Whitney U test?
Yes, I was reading the paper earlier on today. Yeah.
Goodness me. Using that, it showed that there was a statistical significance between my lot and the others. Now, obviously, there's some limitations because we didn't have any post. We had for the 28 with the post, with their post, so their pre-scores, but their post-scores. So we only could, we didn't have pre-scores. So we were comparing post-scores, the 102 versus the 28. But using that number crunching and that wonderful Michael idea, at Brunel University, putting me through the ringer. We used SPSS, quantitative analysis software, and it came out that there was a statistical significance between them. What's come from it is that there's a lot more has come from this, David. I'm very interested in, and there's another paper that's gone to the University of Waikato, just from a visiting professor, Nolene Wright, who was over. I've submitted another paper that looks at the collaborative nature, and it looks at activity theory. Are you familiar with Engstrom's activity theory?
I remember it from way back, and I was kind of reminding myself earlier on today, but I think listeners should be interested to hear a bit more about the, I don't know how you would boil that down, but if you can maybe say a wee bit about activity theory.
It's like a triangle, you know, the subject, object, and subject and tool in order to achieve an objective. Well, Engstrom develops that and say that no, that's a sort of individualist approach. There's a community, there's rules and division of labour with any sort of shared objective. And I'm interested in looking at that. I look in those shared objectives because all those pupils had a shared objective. And when we look at the writing, often there were people who weren't, perhaps the division of labour and those objectives shared amongst the four weren't perhaps evenly distributed, but the pupils were still able to write and reflect and actually acknowledge that they weren't part of the team. So they were still writing, and they were perhaps writing with what was going on. So it fulfilled the sort of requirements for a piece of writing. But it did prove that the when you look at computer games, there's a whole complex set of rules and what the community brings with its, you know, its existing learning, and how that's dispersed and how it's sort of distributed. That's something I'm interested in, because one of the key things that we got from the writing is that when the pupils are writing, the use of the personal pronoun, the we, far outweighed the I.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, and as I said, it's my intentions now are to look at interdisciplinary learning, certainly within a group setting, a collaborative learning situation, and look at the I's and the we's, because I'm interested in looking at a piece of software. It's a program language called R that allows you to do text analysis, text mining. I'm interested in collocation. I'm interested in, are pupils, when they're writing as we, are they producing more sophisticated pieces of writing? So you could look at that. You can look at the pupils' writing from the sort of applying dispersion plots, looking at the occurrences of the writing. When they're writing about episodes that involves others, are they dispensing with got and went? Are their verbs more sophisticated? Within the game, when they're writing and reflecting about the activities, when they're using the game, is there more content knowledge when they're recalling elements of the game, and or when they're working in groups? So I'm very interested in looking at that, David, the I's and the we's, and certainly with regards to when the science content that's up front, do we tailor science booklets? Do we tailor the science texts to make it more collaborative rather than you or I? Because just now they've got units on becoming a scientist, but if we engineer it so that they're more of a team, just by changing those, are we going to develop those people's learning? Is there going to be better retention? Are there going to be more richer pieces of writing, more sophisticated pieces of writing because of that sort of collaborative nature of their interdisciplinary learning? So that's something I'm interested in taking forward, hopefully, through the EdD programme at Glasgow University.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And best wishes with that. We could talk all night about moving on to an EdD, but you know, the quality of your writing is obviously excellent, Hugh, and congratulations on being published in the Press Start journal. I'm just wondering, coming into the last 5 minutes or so of tonight's show, but in terms of your methodology, your approaches, you know, you've talked about some of the limitations, whether that's systemic or timetabling wise or what have you, but just out of interest, as somebody that's got a kind of long-standing interest in educational research, what would you do differently, or what are the kind of major lessons that you've learned as you're starting to think about moving into your EdD?
I think the it's focus. It's having that confidence and knowing what to focus on. There's a lot of data generated, a lot of cameras placed, and there's a lot of data that wasn't actually used. It's looking at that focus now. Okay, the kids are motivated, they're collaborating, they're talking. But I think what the focus needs to be is, what are the problems just now that are sort of being highlighted nationally? And from the statistics documentation, the literacy and numeracy research, it's boys. It's boys in that decrease in writing and reducing that attainment gap. What's happening? How can we bring the disciplines together so that the pupils are writing more, talking more, and being engaged? So what I would do is I would look at focusing on looking at the gender issues and the collaborative issues, the I's and we's that we've just mentioned, and a sort of longitudinal contribution to this international research. From what I've been reading, we're pretty well placed for this, because earlier research in digital games has been sort of focused in the FE and the higher education contexts, as well as and Matthew had mentioned that last week. Down in the primaries, I know there's been work being done by Education Scotland. I'm interested in what BG can offer. Here's an opportunity to look at and focus, and that's the key thing. It's about not doing many things. It's about doing things at breadth and challenging application, and looking at what are girls and boys doing, and what are they doing? How is their writing? How can we affect that by using games and by using collaboration and looking at the we's and the I's for further up in the school? That's what I would do in future, is just look at the genders and look at the collaborative natures of games-based learning.
And Hugh, it's been great having you on the show this evening. If anybody wants to kind of find out more about your work, can you maybe say a wee bit about your blog and where else you have a presence online?
Yeah, I'm at Blue Tanzo on Twitter, and I have the bluetanzo.com blog, which I try and get to occasionally. As I said, I have a 17-month-old baby girl who is sleep averse, and a young son who's 8 who likes being chauffeured everywhere, and a busy English teacher. I try and update as I'm going along, but you know, feel free to contact me on Twitter or on the blog. I don't use Facebook. I'm also on ResearchGate. I'm on ResearchGate, and I'm on Mendeley, where it's a wonderful website where you can share academic papers.
Mm-hmm, of course. And just for everybody's information, I've posted the link, and you can do a web search for Press Start Journal, but your paper in particular, I've popped a link up at twitter.com/edutalker. Hugh, thanks again. Hope you have a peaceful evening now. The wee one doesn't keep you awake. Hopefully in the months and years to come, I'm saying years this time because from my own painful experience of attempting an ED, it'd be great further down the line if you could join us on EduTalk again. So best wishes with everything that you're up to, and in particular, I hope you have a successful start to your doctoral studies.
Okay, thanks, David. It's an absolute pleasure and privilege.